This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conquest3 on Twitter. And I'm here with Wheelie Dealer, who can be found at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. And I'm here with Elric Langton, who everyone knows as at Lemming Investor on Twitter. I've called him multiple different names in the past, as Pete will testify to, but I've got it correct tonight. And the reason why I've got Elric on the show this evening is because of the previous work we've done. He's a blogger, a writer, an interviewer, and he's been investing for over 20-odd years. And he'll tell me precisely how long in a little while when we get to chat to him fully. And also because he did phenomenal work with me last year when we were raising money for Memphis. He does a lot in the community for various different charities. He's done it historically. He still does it now. And also, he's very good at researching small cap companies. So we're going to have a bit of a chat in this podcast about small cap companies. But first, Pete's going to tell us, what is the Twin Peaks podcast all about? Pete, what's it all about?
Well, really, it's just a very much a sort of unscripted, loose format discussion with myself, who's been investing for probably about 23, 24 years, and Pete, who's been going for how long? You've been going 30 odd years, I think. And we just, you know, discuss fair things about like what the markets are doing. We talk about lots of educational stuff, and we usually talk about a few stocks and things, and we're very clear whether we hold the things or whatever. And yeah, that's really the sort of flavor of what we do.
Cool. Right, we're going to dive straight in because I'm conscious that last podcast, number 77, was an absolute marathon, as one person described it. Another person called it mammoth. But bizarrely, the numbers we've had regarding that particular podcast, which you could have watched at any cinema near you, multiplex, was absolutely huge. The numbers were fantastic. The feedback we've had has been brilliant. I had one DM that just said, mate, you know what? I'm really sorry, but after 55 minutes, I switched off. That was the only one I had that was poor. So we're really, really pleased. Thank you ever so much for the feedback. All the feedback you guys, ladies and gents, have given will be in the write-up alongside this, which will be published on Friday. So really thank you all for your support. We've had fantastic numbers for it. We're really chuffed. I was a bit concerned that doing 90 minutes, Elric's a Man United fan, and if Man United were losing, I don't think he would have lasted that long. So we are where we are. Right, Pete, markets. We're just about at 6:17 p.m. UK time. So hello to our listeners overseas. FTSE's finished at 7,312. Been a bit volatile. When we were here and the interest rates were out, the markets had already shut. But 2 weeks ago, the FTSE was nearer to 7,600. You were going to go long in a particular position. Then you went short at 7,000 and odd. Where are you now with the FTSE? What are you doing with it?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I've got quite a large short position, you know, a hedge to my portfolio on the FTSE 100. I think I'm about 25% short. And what has happened is we've had a bit of a bounce since the sort of pressure that was on last week. And I think it's interesting as well, because we're coming into the last week of June. This is the last week of June. And obviously we've got a couple of days to go. And I wonder if there's a sort of end of the month factor has been part of the bounce we've had. And it's about whether the bounce can be sustained. And it's noticeable that yesterday, Tuesday, which would have been Tuesday, the 28th of June, you know, the American market started to wobble again. It's been a little bit more solid today, but it's still chopping around like crazy. The FTSE 100 was down quite a lot this morning, but sort of rallied towards a close. And I think that was affected a lot by AstraZeneca putting in an incredible performance, up 2.5%, hitting a new all-time high today. I can't see any particular news for it. Maybe there's a broker upgrade or something. Something's happening. But, you know, it's the problem with the FTSE 100 is there's just these few mega cap stocks like Shell, BP, HSBC, Lloyds, AstraZeneca, Glaxo, that make such a difference to it that it's a bit of a sort of unrepresentative index, I think is the way to put it. But anyway, I think in terms of where we are, bigger picture, you know, we had a bit of a sell off. We've rallied. Weakness is already coming in. I just think, like we've discussed before, I think we're going to be in for a choppy summer, and I'm expecting we'll have a pretty nasty autumn. That's my sort of thinking on things.
Okay. Alan, what's your thoughts on the FTSE 100, mate, even though you don't really swim in those waters that often?
Yeah, I don't pay a great deal of attention, you know, to the indexes, you know, not on a technical side of it as Wheelie does. But they are a barometer, and you can't really ignore them. So you need to pay attention to what's going on. But I don't think we found the bottom yet. I think we've got some way to go. Whether it's 15%, 20% from where we are, I really wouldn't like to say, because again, like I said, I don't do TA. You know, the next I get to TA is doing the Fibonacci 60-61%. You know, I'm just trying to avoid trying to buy something too expensive. But yeah, there's a lot of bad news out there, and there's always a propensity for more bad news. You know, you've got so many threats going on, you know, from the Russian side, I think. And we've got the West antagonizing Putin as well. So it's sort of six of one and a half of does the other, and bags of 10 paces and stuff like that. I just think the big concern for me is so many mistakes that the Fed have made in the USA. You know, they've made so many mistakes, and they've come clean and you know, and coughed up to make, you know, to be making mistakes, and they've not acted early enough with combating inflation and stuff like that. And then you look at who's actually running America. There's no confidence in that regime at the moment. You know, they're just not making the wrong strategic decisions, and everybody's paying for it. You know, in the pocket, whether it's, you know, filling up your car, whether it's buying chicken or just trying to get baby formula. In, it's not a problem over here, but it's a major problem in America. So there's a lot of, I just don't think we're out of the woods with the bad news. So I wouldn't be piling into anything at the moment. You know, if you've got a bit of cash on the side, keep it on the side. And I do what I've always say do is just scale in and don't throw the kitchen sink at anything. Just be cautious, because we've got some way to go yet, I think.
I think that makes sense.
With that in mind, then, you said got no confidence in what's going on in America or who's leading America. We have just had the by-elections and the Tories got smashed. Is there any confidence in our government at the moment?
No.
No, I'll let Pete. No, let me Pete answer that one first, and then you can answer.
I think clearly not.
You and I felt they might just hold on to Tiverton and Honiton, and they got smashed there.
Oh, you know, it's those were terrible by-election results for Boris. There's no doubt about it. And it's not surprising with all the Partygate stuff and with inflation and all the worries. I don't think it's a surprise at all. I think things may be different when you get to a general election, especially if Boris has gone. If the Tories have replaced Boris, you know, I think the Tories might have a chance. If they keep Boris, it's going to be very touch and go. But to an extent, by-election votes are often protests, and there's so much to protest about at the moment. I mean, it's interesting you're saying about inflation, Elric. I mean, that really concerns me, because when you look at the Bank of England and whatever inflation expectations, their sort of forecasts, they expect inflation to sort of peak I don't know, next year or whatever it is, and then to start falling away again. I think that's a very rosy, positive assumption, and that could so easily be wrong. And all it's got to take is, instead of inflation dropping from, say, 12 to 10 to 8 and steadily dropping back, if it just drops from 12 to 11 to 10, you know, just does a slight slowdown, that is still going to be really painful. And I think there's a huge problem with inflation, and probably the only way they'll be able to get it out of the system is by absolutely crushing economies and putting us all into recession.
Yeah, I think there's an argument that let's just go into recession and get it over and done with.
Yeah,
you know, there is that side of it. There is that argument. Let's just get the recession started. But yeah, I agree. I think there is a rather rosy picture with the forecasters, and let's face it, how many times have you seen these, whether it's with the CBI, whether it's the Bank of England, you know, you've only got to look at what they were saying. If we even vote for Brexit, we're going to go into, you know, UK is going to go into recession. Never happened. And I only say that because it's just an example most people will remember, all these pessimistic forecasts that never came to pass. So when they give you a rosy picture, like they are doing with the inflation, it's going to come down.
Yeah,
I just don't see it. I really don't see it. I think we're still going to be have rising inflation into 2023. I really do. Will it be as high as when I first got on the housing ladder, Friday the 13th, 1989?
Oh.
When interest rates, I think it was 17%, might be 15, but yeah, it was, I remember that very well.
I mean, imagine if interest rates hit that today with the amount of mortgage debt and stuff. Well, that would just be game.
It wouldn't stand.
Game over.
Struggling now, Pete.
Yeah,
I keep talking about food banks and all the rest of it. But going back to the markets, the interesting thing about today was the FTSE 100 was relatively flat, right? The FTSE 250, which I always class as the engine of the FTSE All Share, right, was down 1.6%. Right, you've had Carnival down 16%, obviously because of what's going on elsewhere and fuel prices and all the rest of it. You had I always forget the full name now. Aston Martin, Lagonda.
Lagonda, yeah.
Down 9.8%. Yeah, it's drowning in the Lagonda. I'm joking there. And then you had JD Witherspoon's down 6% because Elric and Pete have not been to the pub often enough. So that dragged that down 1.6, and the FTSE was basically flat, only down 11 points. So you've got this really, you know, diversification, this split going on regarding which companies are deemed to be going to be able to maintain their revenues and benefiting from high oil prices, or pharma, which is, you know, is really quite resilient in certain aspects. So the FTSE 100 is outperforming, and ordinarily is outperforming the FTSE 250 at the minute. It's a bit really, really odd going on at the minute.
Well, I guess in a way that's back to being a risk-off mood. When the mood is risk-off, it's always going to be smaller stocks that suffer more. And I think we're back to that. I mean, I commented on the last podcast, 77, that I noticed a bit of a change where before we had this pattern a lot during 2022 where the smaller stuff would sell off, but the FTSE 100 would hold up quite well. But I noticed in recent weeks, everything was getting sold. The FTSE 100 was getting sold as well. But it's interesting, we've gone back to that previous pattern today, and whether that's just today, I mean, what can you tell from one day? Who knows? But it's interesting that we do seem to have gone back that sort of way of being risk off again.
Yeah, I think it's that rotation back to some quality names. And you talked about some of the blue chips holding up better. I think that's what's happening. I'm not sure what your thoughts are, Elric, regarding why certain companies are getting sold off and others are doing better, larger ones anyway.
Yeah, I mean, well, pharmaceutical sector, well, bio sectors had a pretty torrid time for the, you know, through 2021, and continues to this day. But the thing for me is sometimes it's the algorithms that are driving the indexes, and are the algorithms governed towards or edged towards specific sectors at the time or not? I don't know. I know AI is playing a part of it. So it's, you know, once upon a time you'd be able to tell it, you knew it was the fund managers that were actually hitting the button. You know, sometimes it isn't the fund managers now. You know, the infrastructure that's been put in place now, where you know trades are, you know, trades are being churned over, you know, in milliseconds at a time. You know, on the buy and the sell side, and that creates the volatility as well.
Yeah,
the volatility that we've seen over the recent years, where we've seen particularly the US markets, where you know they've had a really good pummeling. Then towards the end, there's like a mini rally, and we're seeing that more and more often. You know, and if I'm seeing it, and I'm no wheelie dealer who's watching, you know, he's doing the TA all the time. You know, it must be, you know, it's not just my perspective that is happening. I'm seeing it.
Oh yeah,
I'm guessing you're seeing it more than I am, wheelie.
Oh mate, I've seen it all the time that we're getting this incredible volatility. I mean, you know, as we're talking to you today, today's a great example where the all of the indexes have been all over the place today. But I think that's also a function of low volume. That's the thing that really has stood out in recent weeks, is that there is no volume on any of these markets. And of course, when there's no volume, it doesn't take much buying or it doesn't take much selling to get some really sizable moves. I think one of the things that I've sort of picked up on is that a few weeks and months ago, everything was being sold. It was sort of indiscriminate. Basically, if you were in the FTSE 250, if you were AIM or if you were FTSE small cap, you just got sold. And I think there was a lot of that going on. And I've noticed more recently that as results are starting to come out, if the results are good, the stocks are getting reappraised and they may bounce a bit for a day or two or three or whatever, but they tend to then sort of stabilize and they're not falling like they were. And it's the ones that have continually disappointed that just keep dropping. You know, it's almost like if you've had bad results, there's no buyers interested, no one is interested, and the stock just gets pummeled, and then it comes out of more bad results and it gets pummeled again. It just gets pummeled and pummeled and pummeled, and there's never any buyers who are even remotely interested in these stocks that are struggling. So I sort of noticed that. So instead of being a sort of general sell-off, it does seem to be a bit more discriminate now, and some stocks are actually doing quite well.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about a particular stock later on getting pummeled. But the AIM, we've spoken about the AIM, which is your, you know, where you do a lot of your investing, Elric. And it's still sitting, and it's getting ever lower, below that magic 1,000 number. It's at 893 today, down another 14 points, down 1.5%. And the losers today, a couple of companies I don't even know some of these. I don't know most of these. Windar.
Photonics. Yeah.
Down 43%. Ticker symbol WPHO.
Okay.
Simec Atlantis Energy down 41%.
SAE.
Benz Creek up, whatever you call it, blank creek, down 26.7%. And Serico Energy, I think that, I know that's a favourite with some people.
I've got Serica
today. So that's taken the FTSE AIM all share down 1.5%. Do you know any of them, Elric? Any of those companies?
Yeah, I do, but I don't know them intimately. I've come across them mainly through using the filters on the ShareScope when I've been trying to data mine. But it's nothing. There's only one or two that I know fairly well, but nothing that I could offer an opinion on.
Okay, so essentially the results came out for Windar today, ticker symbol WPH, and obviously the markets didn't like them and it got absolutely smashed 43%. So that's another one that's not going to be recovering for a little while, especially if, the, as you say, the markets go ever lower, as Pete says. You know, already down 72% year to date. Sorry, 1 year return is minus 72% year to date, down 55.5%. So my condolences to anybody that was hoping for something to come out of Windar this year, because I don't think we're going to be seeing a recovery out of that for some time. To go down 43% in one day is not healthy.
Mate, the one you mentioned, I thought you said Serica Energy, which got me a little bit.
I did also say that. That was the last one I said, yes.
I nearly had a heart attack. It's
Wait, Serica's yours?
I've got Serica, which is SQZ, which is thankfully
now... Serico, please.
No, it's...
S-C-I-R is the ticker.
It's Scirocco. As in Scirocco. As in...
Apologies.
Volkswagen Scirocco. It's a wind, mate. It's a wind.
No, I don't want to take the wind out of you, Pete. It's Scirocco.
Don't take the wind out of us.
There used to be a car called Scirocco in the 80s and 2000s. Yeah.
There you Volkswagen, go. Yeah.
There you go. Volkswagen Scirocco. There you go. I knew Elric could know.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I want to move a little bit away from the markets, and I want us to talk to Elric and find out what Elric's all about, really. How long you been in the market, Elric? What sort of area you go into? How you filter your stocks? Because obviously you're in the danger end of the swimming pool, the deep end, mate, you know?
Yeah.
Willie and I are at the shallow end. We're trying to just, you know, do our bit, and you're going, nah, I'm going down there with the deep end with the bad boys, you know?
I've got the orange armband.
When did it all start? How did it all start? Go.
Well, it was a bit like when I bought the house Friday the 13th, 1989. I first started dabbling in the market it was a rude awakening, because I started dabbling, it was probably with £2,000 or £3,000 at the time, which was a lot of money in 1987. So it was 9 months before the big crash. So I had a rude awakening. But it was a valuable lesson, though, guys, because what I did, I think it was £3,000, because I had three stocks at the time, and when the crash happened, within the space of 2 or 3 days, my £3,000 becomes something like £600. So it was a rude awakening, and so you've got to cut your cloth. I've always my strategy has always been, I like to have a bit of fun with me investing. Because I've got a pension, and my fund manager looks after my pension. So that's what I consider my retirement. So what I like to do is look for trends, not necessarily companies initially, because the companies tend to come later. I'll give you an example which. I love to do, because I know so many people have mentioned this company, and when I had a former blog before it blew up, I researched a company based on my theory or my thinking that the internet was going to be, you know, going to take off, and take off for people shopping, because my thing was, I hated walking around the shops. It did my head in. Particularly when you end up going back to the same shop.
You're a bloke. Come on.
Yeah. Anyway, so it was ASOS. And when I picked ASOS, when I started investing in ASOS, it was 7.25p. And that was basically... Wow. Yeah, yeah.
But I remember it being like 80 pence. I mean, yeah, no. Long time ago.
Well... It's one of those that got away, and it's another lesson. It's another lesson I've tried to learn, and I haven't quite perfected it yet.
Are your eyes watering, or are those tears?
The tears from the past. I can remember, you know, being cock a hoop, doubling my money one morning. So I took my original float out of ASOS and put it into another company called Ciprotec, and that doubled. the next morning, I thought, oh, this is easy. So the rest of the money, I put it was a trailing stop loss on ASOS. And eventually, I kept tightening my stop loss, which is another lesson, and ended up getting stopped out at £1.30. Of course, I'm really, really chuffed, but I never got that 75 quid.
Yeah.
I know plenty of people that say they did. I wasn't one of them.
Yeah. You know what? With regards to the volatility in that particular share and holding it for the period of time you would have had to hold it, there's very few people that would have held it all the way through.
Yeah.
I recall, I'm sure it might even have been the Shares magazine all those many moons ago. People probably, or somebody will correct me. I remember seeing it in there at 2.5p and at online shopping. I was like, nah, people aren't going to all be going shopping online. They want to touch it. They want to feel it. They want to try it on and da 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 da. And I was like, nah, not going there. And I just, and I've watched it, like you say, all the way up to 70 odd quid and more. And yeah, but you have to be in, you've got to be able to assess that and do the research and think, you know what, this looks like it's a plausible thing. And if they've got good management, this is what I keep saying about getting in early. And you're either going to miss some of these things early or you're going to get in early and you're going to think, actually, I've done well enough now, I'm done. And whether that's at £1.75 for you or £1.30 or whatever it is for other people, sometimes you're going to go, I did all right there, and not be focused on the guy who sold Apple at, you know, $5 a piece, you know, or Amazon. And just, it is what it is sometimes. But yeah. you didn't explain to me what is your filtering method? How do you filter all these little micro cap companies and trends to go, I'm going to go with that one? How do you do that? Because that's the hardest part I find. I find I'm spending weeks doing it, and it's boring.
It is hard. Well, I mentioned the ASOS one because, you know, I thought the internet was going to take off, and I think it has. So I was sort of indicated down.
I think it has.
Yeah, it has
a bit.
Just a tad.
But then, more recently, I've been looking at the microbiome because, you know, the microbiome is a really interesting area. And so what I'm looking at is I'm looking at what the big wide world is looking at. And I'm convinced that a particular area is going to be the next hot area, then I start looking for companies that could benefit from that particular area. But again, because my playground is small cap shares, and particularly what I do like is I like to find the ones that are pre-commercial, yet they're exceptionally risky. But when they pay off, they pay off. And more recently, and I'm probably behind you on this one, is it's been a strange transition for me because I don't subscribe to the climate change and stuff like that. So the research I've been doing recently is going completely against my instincts, which is a difficult thing to do. So I've been looking at in, you know, electric vehicles. I've been looking at lithium, cobalt and stuff like that. So you've got to prepare to look outside your comfort zone, and that creates its own risks as well. And because it's a new area, as you know yourself, there's a lot of time and effort needs to go into it, because part of it, you're trying to convince yourself, and in my case, I'm convincing myself against my gut.
No, sorry, Pete, you look like you're bursting for a wee or bursting to say something. What was you going to say about what Elric said?
No, I just find that really funny because it's like the. I think I know exactly the concept. I sometimes look at companies and I think, oh my God, you know, what you're doing is just bonkers. It doesn't make any sense at all. And then you think about it, you think, yeah, but it's making money. Do you know what I mean? They are doing well at what they do. Even though to me it sounds utterly daft, other people buy it. And at the end of the day, that's what it's about. It's like, this is probably a bad example, but say, for instance, the metaverse, right, with all the headsets and all this stuff. Let's just say that turns out to be massively, massively successful, right, which it may become, yeah? For me personally, it's like, I would never want to do that. I've done it on a Saturday night with some mates. Yeah, it's a bit of a laugh, but I don't want to spend my life with a stupid headset on, you know, monkeying around in some sort of virtual stupid world. I want to live in the real world, you know? So it's not for me. But if people, if money can be made, I don't really care. You know, I'm looking at whether it's making money, whether it's generating revenue, whether it's making profit, whether it's making cash. That's what I'm interested in.
The beauty about the metaverse and AI and all the rest of it, and these hot sort of trends, and whether, and there's billions going into it, and it's very much like Elric was saying, he thought the internet and online shopping was going to kick off. There's a classic interview with David Bowie going back to, what was it, 80s or 90s? Yeah. He was talking about the early concepts of the internet, and he was completely mocked as this complete charlatan and this guy that was, you know, out in space, you know, stoned all the time. And he was absolutely spot on about it, just as Elric was about online shopping. And sometimes you've got to think about what is the metaverse going to be doing? So we only use the gaming side of it. It's about being immersed in the game, not just playing it on your computer and seeing it in 3D or whatever. It's like going, you're in it and you are the character. You're seeing all the other characters and all the rest of it. So that's just the gaming element, but also the healthcare side of it, which no one talks about, or the rest of it. Why are the biggest companies in the world spending billions on the metaverse?
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Will it happen? And how long will it be before they actually make the money out of it, the investment that they're making? You know, Microsoft, Apple, Google, Meta, they're all throwing money at it. Amazon, they're all at it. So at some point or other, you know, Elric looking for the trends in this space will be okay, I think, regarding the tech stuff. The microbiome stuff, we both had a little look at it regarding various different companies. Mm-hmm. And the main one being, which is kicked off this week, is obviously 4D, no yeah. D, ND, you know, yeah. It's gone. You know, and we want to talk about that. I'm not. Have you kept up with the news on 4D, Pete?
I haven't really. Sorry, guys. Can you just sort of quickly explain what the microbiome is? I have a rough idea, but
the essence
really
of
for
it,
our listeners as well.
Basic stuff for people. Essentially, you've got all these enzymes and blah 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 to do with your gut, right? And everybody's DNA, a bit like the gut, is unique. So if you can personalize medicines and pharma to the microbiome and the makeup of your gut, you're on.
That might stop the pain.
Personalizations of medicines is where the end goal is for all of these microbiome things. It's a bit like they're saying, oh, you know, got this stuff, this yogurt is live.
Yeah.
It's better for your gut.
Probiotics.
Personalized medicines. Yeah. That can be going through your body and dealing with whatever the area is that's got an issue or a problem.
Yeah.
Personalized medicines. So that was the long goal for the microbiomes. So 4D, Elric. I'm not sure we're in both at the same time, but I was in relatively early, and they were doing and they were planning and they were all this array of stuff. Had Woodford saying at £10 it was cheap, and obviously he went by the buy. I got in just over 36p, and I thought, here we go. Went a bit lower. And then it took off and it moved on. And then we had lots of people tipping it and racing it and ramping it and all the rest of it. And then it gets itself in a complete mess, because I saw the IPO in the US and I thought, happy days, we're now flying. But just before that, you spotted something which I spotted as a amberish red flag. And I said, I'm going to overlook it. And you didn't. Why?
I see it as a red flag.
And
I got lambasted for it, without going into names. But
let me just stop you there. You, me and Wheeler will always get lambasted by people when we are the odd one saying, whoa, 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 hold up here. I spotted something that may not be, I'm not quite. Oh. The herd will always try and influence the minority, which is bizarre.
Yeah. Well, There's quite a few things that concern me, but like you, I seen 4D as a trade, and I said as much. But I must also say that I called it wrong because I thought if everything goes well with the SPAC and with the listing in the USA, I thought, and it got, some revenues from hitting milestones. I thought this could multi-bag. And I said as much. So I've got to say, I called it wrong. But the red flag I'm going to talk about was when it raised before it listed on the Nasdaq, sorry, in the USA. And I immediately came out and I said, look, guys, tomorrow I'm selling my shares. Here's why. The whole premise, as far as I could see, was for 4D to be going on the American market, which is where, companies like 4D Pharma needed to be, really, was it opened it up to US money. It opened it up to a wider pool of brokers that could help promote it. In my mind, some people will probably want to slap me for saying this, but there's a broader and more sophisticated pool of investors in America, particularly for this particular area. And if that went well, it should create a higher valuation. But I was a little bit concerned about the SPAC because then there was bad news coming about SPACs. They were getting a bit more complicated, and the data on the SPACs now is just ridiculous. So many SPACs have completely failed. But to
But
get
those are special acquisition companies, yeah.
that's
That
right,
are, yeah,
yeah. Thanks,
that is.
really. But the red flag for me was them raising before, and I said to my readers, you've got to ask why they're raising money now in the UK and not in America. And the reason for me being is they'd already sampled the offering, and there was nothing there. There was no appetite for them, so that concerned me. And it just went against everything that were going on the American market for. So that was it. I said, and I'm out. And it just seems to be a whole long list of one, mainly placings. I mean, up until that point, I think they raised something like 170 million pounds. Dilution after dilution after dilution. When it listed, which I think was 2016, I think it might have been, it had 20 million shares in circulation. That, I think it was 131 million shares in circulation before the Nasdaq listing. And all the
Around that.
time, you're getting investors on the forums expecting £10 again, and they're completely forgetting.
You don't get it when there's that amount of dilution, mate. Absolutely
Exactly,
not.
exactly. And you point these facts out, and you just get dog's abuse.
I think the thing for me, mate, that was that I saw that red amber flag when they did that raise, and I too went, okay, I'm going to let that one go. And I've been letting so many things go over the past year regarding that company. And it got to when they had the Keytruda data that was on a couple of months back in March, April time. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to take some off the table because I'd watched it go from 36 where I bought it, went all the way up during the spike where all the Reddit board jumped on board regarding the IPO in the US. And then just come all the way down. And I'm thinking, it can't go any lower. So I'll add some there. I had a 2% position, ended up with a 3% position, and it just kept falling. So I took my 2% off at just over 71 pence. And then last Tuesday, when that Q&A was kicking off, and I'd read all the, just go back a bit, backtrack a little bit. I'd read all the stuff about, the loan and the credit agreement and all the rest of it. And there wasn't anything in there that I'd read, which made me alarmed because I thought they're going to get that data out and that data out. They're going to hit that milestone and hit that milestone before they burnt through this money. And I'd raised the concerns that they were going through about 2.25 per month. But I thought they're going to get, the next data that comes out, they're going to raise some money off that. They're going to get a partner in there with that. They're going to get, And all the time I was waiting for the next partner to come on board, to lump a lot of money in there, and for that agreement to be okay. And I'm thinking, well, if they get to the point where they haven't got another partner giving them money, then they're going to come back into the market and raise money to offset and make sure they don't breach the covenants. Last Tuesday, we're only in about 20 minutes to the Q&A talk that he was giving, and I won't say which company was giving the talk they were using to give the talk. And I was like, my eyes were like that, so wide eyed. I literally had the call open, and I opened another link and went onto my account, and I was like, and I was literally just gone. I'm out. And that was last Tuesday. And I put a tweet out saying, I've capitulated. I've done. I'm out. And that was Tuesday. And I was raging because this individual was not doing his job. The CFO, CEO, the company were not doing the job. And they were basically saying, we've stuffed it up here, guys. And we're not sure how well we're going to be able to do going forward. And we've got this and we've got that. I'm like, you shouldn't be talking like that. I don't want you to spin it. But I want you to tell me that you've got things to control and you've got plan A, B, and C. And I didn't hear any of that. And I wasn't going to wait another hour to hear him carry on. So I just sold, you know. But for what to happen, come out on the Friday lunchtime to say, we're suspending the shares. And then Friday tea time, everyone's finished. It's 6 o'clock. It's 6:22, whatever it is. Everyone's gone home. Everyone's having the beers. Everyone's with the partners, the friends, and chilling out for the week. And everyone's done. Nobody wants to talk about a share at 6:30 at night. They just want, it's been a long week. It's been volatile, and everybody just wants to chill out now. To come out and do that to investors, oh, mate, I was absolutely right. I was on a call. Sorry, I was in the house with the missus, chilling out with a mini boss, and the phone went. And my mate was saying, have you seen the news? I was like, what news? What news? It's 6:30, mate. I've seen the news. DD's gone into administration. I was like, you are kidding me. And I was raging. I'm raging now. You know, I'm not raging because I've lost money on this show. Let me make this right. People think, oh, Pete's kicking off. He's not used to losing any money. You know what I mean? I'm raging because, once again, investors have been absolutely ripped to shreds by, I'm going to say it, by mismanagement. Yeah? You have the CEO and you have the leaders of the business to look after the company. We're the shareholders. We've got a stake as big as everybody else in that company. The management are there as responsible, and they're paid to look after the company. Yeah? And they haven't done it in this case. Yeah?
No.
I've been saying to people, you know what? I will do my best to see what I can do about this situation. They may not get anything out of it, but I would be saying to everybody listening to this podcast now, yeah, to sign up and check out the cost and become a member of ShareSoc, the Shareholder Society, www.sharesoc.org, right? And underneath the bottom of it, either say at Conkers 3 recommendation or at Twin Pete's recommendation, so they know where you've come from. And then put the reason why you've been triggered to become a member is because of 4D or all the other companies that have gone under in the past for you, and just see what they can do. Because I think something needs to be checked out here. There's too many levels of stuff that's not quite right here for me. And I hate it. I saw it last time with Sirius Minerals. We all remember Sirius Minerals, SXX. That absolutely just took people out. And it's happened again. And it keeps happening.
To me, I don't know whether it... I think the incompetent side of it is... And there's a bit of rearview mirror... or hindsight, if you like, here, is the fact that you've got a bunch of scientists who are incredibly talented at what they do, and they're looking at a strategy where they think they've got multiple shots at goal. So you've got, through the live, you know, biotherapeutics, you've got a whole host of things that start with MRX and have a number after it, like 0005 or 0029, and some of it's for, you know, asthma, it might be for irritable bowel syndrome, cancer and stuff like that. But the problem is, as we've seen, history says, you know, right from the get-go, they've been raising money. It's expensive. Why don't they pick one or two and go from there.
Yeah,
it sounds like
this is the problem. This is the problem, Elric. You're burning through 2.25 a month, right? They were going at too many things at the same time. They didn't focus down on what would be our quick win or better win to focus on. They were going at all these different things and get, you know, I mean, if you chase all the rabbits, you'd never get one, do you? And that's what happened. Pete, what did you see of all this?
You've nailed it exactly. So, I mean, to be honest with you, I know absolutely nothing about DDDD, but the thing that stands out, exactly what you said, if you have a business, a company that lacks a clear strategic direction, a clear strategic focus, if it's just scattergunning across lots of different things, then that, you know, it's not going to work, is it? It just sounds like a recipe for disaster. You need to have focus. It's sort of the golden rule, really. Yeah. One of the many golden rules.
Yeah. Right, do you want to add anything on that? I don't want to spend all night talking about 4D, to be fair.
Yeah, well, the other thing I want to add is the fact that, one, I feel sorry for some of my readers that, you know, wasn't advice, because I don't give advice. I provide research. I don't tip anything. I don't say go and buy this or anything like that. But, you know, some of my readers continued to hold and sent me messages before this happened. I said, are you really selling? You know, have you bottom lipped it? I said, yeah, I've bottom lipped it, you know, because, you know, I see it as a red flag. You know, something has gone on behind the scenes that, and we're not being told about. That was my gut feeling, and no pun intended, by the way. But the thing is, I think it's got to be said, is there are too many echo chambers, and we're seeing it across society, not just in stocks and shares. You're seeing it with the political environment, stuff like that, and identity politics and stuff like that. So don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
Don't go down that road. We've
got an hour. No, we'll be here till next month. But when I wrote my last editorial on it and made it quite clear that, you know, the market was still open at the time. I says I'm selling tomorrow. I'm out. On that day, I lost over 30 Twitter followers. Yeah, and if you were to go on one financial forum beginning with A, you'll see the dog's abuse that I was getting. You know, for just speaking the truth, and you see it time and time again. People need to. I mean, another thing I'd say, the company was quite explicit and made it quite clear. In one of their announcements, I can't remember the date now, but they did say there's a possibility that we're no longer a going concern. And people choose to
They did say it in an RNS, Elric. But however, even on the call that they had last week, you know, there was conversations had about we've got this in check, and we may be able to have something else. Eventually they said that, you know. So they've said some things in the RNS and then countered that saying, will be a going concern in 12 months. They've only just got recently a new CFO. What was all that about? Was he going to, you know, do the fire hosing down and bring all the money in all of a sudden? It's, you know, it's a staggering amount of money's being raised and been burnt. But I want to move on now. So let's talk about your other microbiome idea that you've had. What is it? What is it about?
Well, there's a couple, but one of them has left a bit of a bitter taste in my mouth, because it's one I've been a cheerleader of for quite a while.
I love right. that bitter taste and guts. I mean, we're just
it's
a microbiome themed thing here, Pete. Let's go for it.
He's just doing the whole digestive system.
Yeah, the
it's gut brain. It's all good.
The gut brain axis, but I'm sat on my brain. there's two companies that I've been involved with. For quite a while, one no longer, because I just got you know, the longevity was just becoming too long, and I felt like I'd been led up the garden path by the CEO. Whether that was deliberate or not is another matter altogether. And that was Optibiotics, and that's got a really good. I mean, it is a well run company, but it's got these micromodulators where they can manipulate the microbiome. And I mean,
sorry, that's OPTI, yeah.
OPTI, yeah. Optibiotics Health. It's spun out two companies that are inside it. One of them was Skin Biotherapeutics, which is the one that I'm really, really focused on at the moment, because that company is being run really well. The share price might say something different, but you've got to remember, this share price has come up from, like, I think it's around about 5.5p when COVID struck.
And that one is SBTX.
SBTX, Skin Biotherapeutics.
Yeah.
Now, to give Stephen Hara of Optibiotics his due, He's one of these visionary people that, like me, I'm not saying I'm a visionary person, by the way, he's looking for areas, he's looking for trends, which is what I try to do. And he spotted the IP in Skin Biotherapeutics, which is basically it was spun out of University of Manchester. And it was headed by one of the world leaders in dermatology, Catherine O'Neill, Professor Catherine O'Neill. She's probably the go-to person in the world where big pharma that's in the area of skincare, they go knocking on our door. That she's a protocol where they all go to. She's very, very knowledgeable, very, very bright. So They've got this lysate now, which is going to change the world of cosmetics, by the way. And I don't say this with, you know, hyperbole. And I'm not talking out of seat my pants. They've got this lysate that has been scientifically proven, by the way, they're in the process of putting it into cosmetic ranges. And their partner, Croda PLC, who bought Sederma, a French company, I think it's about 1995, for about 63 million. They bought Sederma to get their hands on Matrixyl, which is the main active ingredient you see in 90-odd% of skincare creams that are making anti-aging claims. But it's smoke and mirrors marketing. You've seen it all. 9 out of 10 cats prefer this and all this sort of stuff. But for the first time ever, they'll be able to make specific claims that a cosmetic has had a material benefit on the skin, has reduced, has improved the appearance, as in anti-aging.
I'm going to interrupt you here, Alric,
yeah.
Right? Because you've been uber bullish on that. But yeah. What about the what ifs? The bearish points? Let's talk about those. Regarding the taking over the cosmetics world, what if
it's the what if the concern I have is it's still a tiny company, and Croda has just sold it's repositioned itself into the healthcare sector, exactly where Skin Biotherapeutics is, and it's swimming in cash right now. Swimming in cash. It could easily, it probably spends more on biscuits in the office than it does on skin biotherapeutics. He just take it over.
Yeah.
That's the concern I have. The other concern
it's
I have
a good
is
company. I'm not going to let you rubbish Croda, because that's where my dad made his fortune. You know what I mean? And yeah. He's still good pals with some of them there. That I think from what interactions I've seen of Croda and research I've done on them, they've always been an above board company. And if they get into a partnership agreement with a, I call it a tiddler, a small cap company, they'll tend to be honorable. There's lots of, you know, companies, I'll call them charlatans, whatever you want to call them out there, that will just, oh yeah, we'll give you this 10 million and we'll look at you. They basically just get their eyes on the patents and all the rest of it and go, we'll do that ourselves. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. And off they go. Crota, I've never seen him do that. So if they've got Crota on board and they can manage that relationship and they can do their side of the deal, I would sooner see and envisage Crota buying them. You know,
yeah, I
but if they get too big and obviously things take off, why would Skin buy it? You know, SBTX want to be bought anyway.
Yeah, I think for me, I echo what you say about Crota. They've been a fantastic partner. They've invested something like £5 million in the project. They've actually manufactured a dedicated production line for the lysate, which Skin, I mean, I'm pretty sure you know the significance of that. The downside for Skin Biotherapeutics, and it's one that keeps going back and haunting it. Stephen O'Hara, as I said, he bought Skin Biotics as it was inside University of Manchester. I think I'm going off my grey matter now. I think it was something like £750,000 a few years ago, and he got something like 45% of the company for that. In that time, I think in the past 4 years, he's whittled away that down to, so I think it's about 21%. So he's been a continuous seller of Skin by Therapeutics over the past 4 years to fund and keep Optibiotics afloat, you could say, the cynics would
creating
say.
Creating a drag on it. Yeah.
So he's created a bit of a drag. Now, he's in a lock-in period at the moment, until probably thinks about November this year. I'm not 100% confident, even with the 2 million cash that Opti's got, that he won't come knocking on the door again, say, can I sell some more? That's the frustration. That's the frustration. And I've actually tried to plant a mustard seed in Stuart's mind, with Crota in mind. And I've asked him if you know, do you not think it would be beneficial to you if you can get Crota, and I think an absolutely outstanding partner, if you can get them on board strategically and maybe have them waiting next time Optibiotics want to sell more Skin Biotherapeutic shares.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, and the other thing as well, I mean, the funding issue comes up every now and again. And no CEO in his right mind is going to say, we're never going to do a funding, you know, because...
No, not unless they're being interviewed on point and they go, no, 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 and then 3 weeks later they do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, strategies change. Opportunities arrive, you know, like Skin Biotics, you know, they raise money. And they got Skin Biotics, and it's worth something like over 13 million for them at the moment at today's price, you know. So it's been, so, you know, for all my complaining, Stephen O'Hara has done a really nice piece of business. If you ignore the 15 or 16 million he sold, worth that he sold, you know, for what, 3-4 million pounds he's got back, you know. So so he's actually squandered money as well. So that's the fly in the ointment, you know.
Okay. I hear what you're saying, and obviously there's a massive opportunity for them if everything's executed correctly and they get everything across the line. I want to change things up a little bit now because I'm conscious of the time and how long we're running for. I want to ask Pete now to just tell us about the charity stuff, and then we're going to talk about some shares and some general housekeeping stuff as well. But thank you for that, mate.
Yeah, well, every year on the as part of the podcast, we try to support a charity or whatever. Last year, Pete suggested a charity that was in the locality to him in Leicester, and we raised a lovely amount of money for them. This year, the one we're doing is one that's very dear to my heart because I'm spinally injured. I'm paralyzed from the chest level down. And the charity, which deals with, you know, does a lot with spinal injured people, especially with kids and stuff, is the Backup Trust. And it's a great charity. It was originally set up to sort of help with getting disabled people going skiing and things. And it's then became more doing outward bound courses and doing lots of things like wheelchairs. It sounds a stupid thing, but there are actually skills to how you use a wheelchair. I was chatting to someone the other day and telling them about there's a curb around the corner from my house. And the way there's a curb, it's not that deep. It's, say it's that sort of depth, you know, say three inches or something curb. But the way I get off a curb is that I have to sort of launch myself, my wheelchair, off of this curb and sort of try and land on all four wheels. And I was out the other day having a little wheel around or whatever, and I came to this curb, and I don't know what happened, but I went to push myself off, and sort of halfway through the jump, I sort of changed my mind as if I didn't actually want to do the jump. And I had the worst landing ever. And God knows how I didn't fall out of my chair. I would have been like sprawled in the road sort of thing, you know. So it's a bit of a lucky escape. But yeah, so wheelchair skills are really important. And obviously I need to go on the wheelchair skills course.
Let's just say you're lacking your skills at the minute, Pete, yeah?
Oh, don't. I think I've just
That's
got
That's an admission rusty. After how many years in a wheelchair. Come on, just tell us who's donated and let's move.
Yeah,
let's move
I was there. Looking on the we've got, it's on the justgiving.com/fundraising/TwinPeaks. And basically, if you go to that page, you can make a donation, whatever. Got some great ones on here. We've got Matthew Gregory, who's given us a nice dose of money. Great stuff, lads. Keep it up. So thanks, Matt. Brilliant. And Salty. We know Salty. Hello, Salty. Thanks, mate. I love this one. He says, enjoying the pod and loving Wheelie's TikTok videos. Keep up the good work, chaps. And he's given us a nice donation. I mean, I'm so pleased that he commented on my TikTok videos because, you know, I've been doing them for a while now. They're just short little 3-minute videos of an educational kind of nature. I must have done, I probably put out like, I don't know, 30 or 40 now. There's loads of the goddamn things. But I've noticed that I'm getting more followers on TikTok and the actual views is building and I'm getting some really good response. So if you haven't seen my TikTok videos, you don't even need a TikTok account. If you go to Google and just write Wheelie Dealer TikTok videos, it'll come up and you can just watch them. So you may find that interesting, especially if you're new to investing. I totally recommend it to people who are new to investing.
Brilliant. Now, I've got to mention Matthew Gregory is one of the people that gave us some really good feedback for the podcast 76-77 as well, Pete.
Brilliant.
And some of the feedback we have is, like I said earlier, is going to be in the actual write-up. I want to mention one stock myself at the moment that today I sold. I'm just bringing people up to speed with it. I said I'd do that on this particular show. So as well as 4D last week, I've got rid of one of my income portfolio stocks. And that is JLEN, Environmental Assets Group. I purchased at 105 a little while ago, just over probably had it now a full 12 months. And I've sold it today at 120. So altogether, including dividends, that income return in my dividend portfolio is 19%. And the reason why I've sold that particular one, which ordinarily you think, actually, that's quite a conservative little company, doesn't go up and down that much and blah, blah, it's not too volatile. Why have you sold that? The reason why I've sold that is sitting at premium to NAV at the moment. They raised some money in January at 101 and it's currently sitting at 120. So that's a big rise in 6 months for a slow, steady company. And also because we're heading towards the summer months and despite the war and all the energy stuff and blah, 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 my view is we're going to be using potentially less energy during the summer for a variety of different reasons. And therefore, because of, I'm hoping in the next 3 to 6 months, there's a de-escalation regarding Russia and Ukraine, oil prices may come down, hopefully. And energy prices will may come down. And therefore, the renewables, which is what JLEN is involved in, will come down and the premium might become a discount. And if that is the case, and it goes back down to 105, 108, I may well buy them back again, because it's yielding 6-7%, nice and easy, and I'll be able to make another 20% over the next 12 months, whenever that particular thing happens regarding the share price. Right? Have you got any stocks you want to share, Lemming, that you do not own, Elric? Sorry, let me call you Elric whilst we're on here. Any stocks that you like in the market that you do not own?
Well, it's rather a sector that I've been writing about, and I think Core Lithium is one of them that is on my watch.
Okay.
That
That's CXO on the ASX.
it's on the ASX, and that's where I've been moving a lot of my attention to is the what I think is a better regulated index in Australia, because you can't. It's not like the AIM where you can issue any nonsense. Over there, you've got tighter regulations where your RNS, what they issue, it does have to be price sensitive. Otherwise, you're not issuing
Nonsense.
an.
I've
But you've
got
also
some
got.
exposure on that market as well. Agreed. I completely agree with you. And
Yeah.
the thing is about that particular market, and you're absolutely on point here, is that they are so strict. Right, okay, we're going to hold your shares off the market now for the next 12 hours till you sort that out. There's none of this woo-and-wah stuff going on in the background. It's just we'll suspend you for 12 hours, get yourself sorted out, and come back next day.
Yeah, I want another stock that I'm looking at. It's on my watch list, and it's a rather controversial one because it's embroiled with the Investor Action Group because it's been alleged to have committed fraud. So it's one I'm watching closely. Rivian Motors, which is one of these electric vehicle types that they do SUVs and stuff like that, and they look quite nice.
In the US, in the US,
Yeah, in the US, and it's got a little bit.
RIVN.
Dollar RIVN, I
Yeah.
believe.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via Sharepad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code Twin Peaks. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to Sharepad today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Yeah, it's had a bit of a kicking. I think earlier this year they were about $50. They're around about 23, 24 now.
You use the word kicking, mate. They've had a better kicking than Man United. Honest to gosh, mate, come on.
I'm gonna cry for my mum in a minute. Yeah,
I've got
so
to get a Man United dig in there somewhere, mate. Come on.
yeah, I've been getting off my bitter mates, I can take it. I can
So
take it.
explain to us what's going on, what happened with Rivian, because it came out absolutely and it's going to be the next Tesla, and then it's just gone short and sweet now.
Well,
We're running out of time. Come on.
the simple thing was it was all about numbers, how many vehicles they were going to produce. And the cost of these, and it didn't quite materialize that way, and that was what was in the prospectus. So so they've been caught out. So there's a class action group, and the Americans, they love a class action suit. So that's going through the system at the moment. So it's not something I would buy now, but once the dust is settled, and how much it's going to cost the company if they're found guilty. Then it might be a time, to have a little nibble, because, whether you agree that electric vehicles are going to be the saviour of the planet, which they're not, you ain't going to get away from
You
it.
don't
That's
know
where
that
they've
yet.
gone.
Don't say that. You don't know that yet.
I do.
Fair enough.
I do. I've spoken to the big man. He's told me it's all nonsense.
Oh my
He
gosh.
tells me every Sunday.
Okay. Pete, have you got a stock you want to share with us, mate? Come on. You've always got
Well,
loads, mate. You read all the magazines, so you know every single stock that's been tipped. Come on.
I'll link to a bit linked to your John Lang Environmental. It's a company called ORIT, which I think is Octopus Renewables Investment Trust or something like that.
Okay.
Now, what I noticed about, I mean, if you look at the chart, it's just gone pretty much sideways for 3 years. It's very much an income portfolio, boring kind of stock. But what I did notice, what I thought was really interesting, apart from the 5% dividend, it says that their contracts have got 10 for the next 10 years have got inflation links. And I thought that was a really interesting point. So people might, if people are after, a bit of the old green stuff, a bit of the old save the planet, and if Rivian isn't quite the one that appeals to them for saving the planet, then ORIT could be a nice, boring, tuck away, tedious income portfolio stock, give you a nice little dividend that's probably going to increase every year, and it should give you a bit of inflation protection. So I think it's quite an interesting one to look
I
at.
think
I don't hold
a
it.
lot of the safer plays at the moment that are pushing towards a premium, if not above a premium, are inflation-linked sort of REITs and renewable plays, energy plays. So that's a space to have a look at. I spoke at the beginning of June regarding where we're at, 75, 76, 77, and I spoke at the beginning of June saying we're going to have lots and lots of takeovers. And I did say six. I may miss a few out here, but we've had CareTech, CTH, ticker symbol, where the founders have just jumped in at the last minute to try and outbid another company, DBay. So that's going on right now. You had Biffa, the waste management company, prior to the close of a £3.35, they've had an indication of an offer at £4.45, valuing them at 1.3 billion. We've had the Ultra Electronics bid that's been running on since last July, Cobham, Cobham, depending on which part of the country if I'm pronouncing it. It looks like that's going to go through now because the Secretary of State has said, yeah, all right, we're going to waive that through despite all the security stuff and all the rest of it. And that last week was £30.70, and the bid was declared, as in you can sail through at 35. So that was a bit of an arbitrage situation for people to have a look at. And then there was a possible bid for Euromoney, ERM, £4, £14.61, again, a whopping premium. And then the best premium of all, this one goes out to, I think it's Brilliant Leader is his name, Simon.
Yeah,
On
Simon's
Twitter,
okay.
everyone knows him as a good egg.
Yeah.
He's got EMIS, and they came up with a 44 to 49% premium bid at £19.25. So the share price just went vertical. So, as I've said before, there are still quality companies on AIM and across the whole of the FTSE from blue chip downwards. There's some quality stocks out there. Please, please, please go out there and do some research. You may already have a good quality stock in your portfolio that's underwater. Do some research before you sell it. Don't be that person that sells it on Friday afternoon and wake up on Monday morning going, oh my gosh, to a 20, 35% premium because it's been taken over. Yeah, the quality stocks will eventually rebound whenever this time happens. And some of the quality stocks you've got in your portfolio will be taken over in the next 6 to 18 months. You might just have to be patient with it. Yeah. I want to talk about a little bit of what's going on in the markets at the minute. And Elric and Wheeler back me up on this. It's very quiet on the platforms at the moment. It's far quieter than it was this time last year. It's very unlikely that you're going to see the number of blogs for the half year point, which is what we're going to hit on Friday. Right, last year everyone's like, whoop, 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 I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing so well, and talking about all the different stocks they've got and how the portfolio is performing. You won't get this on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of this end of week because other people's portfolio is not doing so well. I had a conversation with a couple of fund managers, right? And essentially, egos and humility will not allow some people to tell you about how badly they're doing. So rather than tell you anything, they will tell you nothing. When the markets come back, they will also come back. Yeah. There are people saying that they're 100% cash, 50% cash, 60% cash, blah, 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 blah. When the markets are doing well again, they'll be back. Pete, do you want to add anything to that? Am I calling this wrong? Are the fund managers calling it wrong?
Mate, that's totally what happens. You know, it's what I always say. It's like whatever the markets are doing, you've got to work in the same consistent, normal manner. Whether markets are good, whether markets are bad, act like a robot, be robotic, do the same stuff over and over again. It makes no difference whether the markets are up and down. It's just about you following your process, following your method, following your system. Just keep doing it over and over. Don't get blown around by the winds of the market and the emotions and all that stuff.
Cool. Elric, anything?
Yeah, well, I'll confess that I'm over 35% down this year. Am I concerned about it? Yeah, because it's painful. But everything that's in my portfolio, well, most of it's in my SIP. And that's me playing psychological games with myself, because my view is I've got it in my SIP. I'm not going to take it out of my ISA and go and spend it on the latest iPhone or whatever. So I try not to be material. But what I do, the money that I earn, I will buy monthly, I will add to my SIP, and I will buy more shares that I've got, because I'm not a trader. See, one of the things, and it's one of, you've heard me say this before, you need to know more about yourself than you do the company you're investing in. So, because you know yourself.
We talk about psychology all the time on here.
Yeah. And that's what I love about your podcast. You're not afraid to talk about the pitfalls of psychological stress and stuff like that. So that's me playing games myself, because I know, and I've done it.
Let me stop you there. It's not about playing games with yourself. The importance here, and we say this all the time on this podcast, there are 100,000 different ways to be a trader and 100,000 different ways of being an investor. I and Wheelie, we talk about how losers on here all of the time, because it happens to everybody. I talk about the multi-baggers, the 5-baggers, the 10-baggers, the 20-baggers. Why? Because it's difficult to get a one bag. So the reason why I talk about the losers and also the extremes as well with the big winners is because you have to put in the time. You will get some wrong, you will get some right, but you have to be able to put in the time and the years. And we, Wheelie and I, and the fund managers I speak to, yeah, are still getting it wrong. Spoke to, had a fantastic interview with Reg Hoare, right? MHP, former investment banker. He's still making mistakes. He's still trying to catch the odd falling knife here and there, right? But what has he done? He's reassessed, and he keeps reassessing, and he now uses a top slicing strategy. So anybody that hasn't done so yet, please just look on Twitter for Investing Matters, or ask your platform for Investing Matters and find it. And there's scores of interviews on there, and Reg is the most recent one, about how to get better at investing. Fund managers are on there, still getting it wrong. Still trying to get it right. There are fund managers, Elric, at the moment. I've looked at all the stats on there. There are scores of well-regarded, highly regarded US, Australian, Canadian, and British fund managers, UK-listed fund managers, that are down more than 35%. Right? And they're not taking risks with small caps like you are. They've looked at quality stocks, seeing quality, and they've still got spanked.
Yeah.
Everyone gets it wrong. And people say, oh, well, why are you talking about that? Because there's all these different strategies out there. And there's not one shoe fits all. The way I do it, and Elric does it, and Wheelie does it, is not the way for you. You have to find your own way. Yeah, don't copy anybody. I keep saying it on the podcast. Don't listen to what Pete says about what stocks he bought or he hasn't bought or I've bought. Yeah. Go and do your own research and find your own stock. Yeah. I'm raging about 4D earlier, right? And I feel almost guilty that I've mentioned it here on this podcast a couple of times. I've been asked to talk about it loads of times. I go, I'm not going on that on there talking about it. I'm not doing it. Other shows and other podcasts, they'll go on there and only ramp the stocks that they're in. You'll get a fund manager talking about 15 stocks, 12 stocks, 5 stocks that they own. And that's all they're talked about. We're trying to do this podcast to educate people. And the only way to educate people is to talk about how to do stuff. If this was a fishing program, we wouldn't be pulling out the fish and showing it in the frying pan, saying, yeah, eat it.
We'd never catch the fish.
You know, it's not a cooking program. It's how to fish. This is what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
Have I missed it here, guys? What am I talking nonsense?
No, mate, spot on. Absolutely spot on. I mean, I was just thinking, fund managers who are down these heavy percentages, imagine the psychological strain of you know, it's other people's money. I mean, it must be, it's like, you know, I'm down sort of like 18% on my normal portfolio this year. I think I'm up about maybe 6 or 7% on my income portfolio. And it's painful, you know, it's horrible. But at the end of the day, I've only got myself to answer to. Imagine if you've got that extra psychological pressure of having to answer to your investors. I mean, it must just be horrendous.
Yeah, but the comfort I give myself is, I know I've been in this position countless times with how many bear markets, how many market crashes we have. It was even worse when, because it was so quick with the COVID crash. I was down, must have been over 60% at one point, and that's the worst I've ever seen my portfolio, and I'd had a really good run, you know, for a couple of years, and then the crash, you know, and I thought, well, just suck it up, boy, just live with it. What are you going to do now? Capitulate? Because once you've capitulated, you ain't going to get it back. It's gone. You crystallised your loss. So, yeah, and every single one of the companies that I had, I didn't want to sell because I had the conviction to hold them. So I just bought more.
Yeah.
And buying more can help you. Yeah, we've all thrown good money after bad.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we've all thrown good money after bad. And I'm no different. I've made some howlers in my time. And I'm sure I've got a few more in me as well. That's just the nature of the beast. You know, you're picking yourself against macro events,
algorithms and large boutique fund managers and all the rest of it. We are just grains of sand in the whole, you know, structure of it all. So yeah, this is why we're doing the podcast, Alric, because all of us grains of sand, we're trying to make into something bigger. You know, we're trying to encourage people to save. You know, we're trying to encourage people to invest, and we're trying to encourage them to get to a point where they're confident to make decisions on their own footing, and not having to pick up a magazine and go, oh, X, Y, and Z says this is the best thing this week, I'm going to buy it. You know, that platform's tipping that fund, so therefore I'm going to buy it. They're able to dissect and do the research and see the trends that you're seeing early and hopefully benefit from it, you know, if the management actually execute. And that's the whole point of the whole premise of this program. What can we learn from listening to this? There's three guys here talking complete nonsense, or are they talking about three different ways of doing the same thing? And then next week, there's two different people talking about how to do it. There's so many different ways of doing this, you know?
Yeah.
What's the British staple, fish and chips? How many different ways can you fry fish and chips? You know, you go to one curry house and it's a different, you know, meal to the other curry house. It's still a curry house. Yeah. Oh, you got me hungry now. Sorry. See, I've been thinking about food.
Don't get me
hungry. Hey, I'm going to give you the opportunity to say one more thing, and then I'm going to finish off with Alric espousing some wisdom, because I feel like I've talked to death here. Oh, before we say anything, you guys have all shared your portfolio and how it's doing, and I'm not saying this to brag. I'm just trying to say how difficult it is. I'm up for the year thus far because of AstraZeneca and how well some of the companies have done for me, but some of the stocks that I held and I've got conviction in, I've completely rolled over. And that's the nature of the beast. If you've got conviction, sometimes, regardless of how good the company is, it will roll over. You have to decide whether or not, as Alric has said just earlier, you're going to stay put. Yeah? Are you going to stay put or are you going to capitulate? The markets may not recover as quickly as you want them to, and they may get worse. We don't know what's going to happen in the next 6 months. If you're listening for the show to say, we think the bounce is on now and the markets are going to go and smash it between now and July to December, we don't know. Everyone should admit.
No one knows.
What do you want to say, Pete?
Well, basically that, you know, no one can know the direction of the market. I mean, I have hunches. You know, my best guess is that as we were discussing earlier, that you know, I think the markets could go lower, and normally that happens around the autumn sort of time. But you know, it's just a hunch, it's just a guess. I mean, you know, Ukraine peace might break out next week, and that could completely change everything. So you know, we're just in a very, very strange time. We've just got to take it as it is. Really, there's not a lot we can do about it.
True. Elric, I want you to tell us two things, right? Both of your websites, blogs, which is counts as one. And secondly, your thoughts about the markets very, very quickly, mate. And then we're going to close it because I've been running for an hour and a bit now.
Yeah, well, the blog that's been running the longest since, I think it's 2017, is Lemming Investor newsletter and research newsletter. That's currently hosted on Substack. The other one, that's the caveat with that is they're the riskier stocks. They're usually the pre-commercial stocks. There are some that are transitioning really, really well, and I would look at some point putting them on the small company champion site. Again, that's on Substack. That's really aimed at more Zulu-esque companies that have been around a while, often paying a dividend. They're less risky, but you know, when you say less risky, you've seen what's happened in the markets. Even really good stocks have been battered. So you're on the stock market, so they are still risky, but it's the less risky.
Sorry, stupid question. What is Substack?
Substack is how would you describe it?
Is there like a website address so that people can find you?
Well, it's like the editor's version of YouTube. So YouTube, you put your videos on.
Right.
Substack is where you put your editorials on.
Okay.
And there is an option I can't remember what the word is now. I've just had it on the back of my tongue. Collaborate with other like-minded. And there's also stuff on that. It's not just finance. There's people just writing books, their own personal blogs about their journeys and stuff like that.
So how do people find it then? What do they have? Do they go to their browser and what do they type in?
If you go to Lemming Investor and click on my profile, it will take you to the Small Company Champion site. On the Small Company Champion site, you've got a link to Lemming Investor. You've got a link to Twin Peaks podcast.
Excellent.
And a couple of other stuff. And there's a link to your charity as well. I know some of my readers have been dipping in every now and again to help you out. Hopefully they'll continue doing that.
I need to add as well, Elric, that some of your editorials have been written and published on ShareScope.
Yeah, there's one today published on ShareScope. It's one of the longest ones. It's about ESG and AI, how that's evolving. Some scary stuff in there, I might add. I'm not completely hooked on the ESG. There's some bad stuff in there, I think. Yeah, ShareScope published that for me today. I've got a monthly slot. So most months they produce an editorial of mine. And they're really good because they allow me free rein, so I can, and they're not cutting huge waves of stuff out of it. so far so good, yeah. And I got to thank you for that, Pete, because you helped me with that one. So, big thank you.
I mean, after what you helped me with regarding the Memphis fundraise, mate, you know, I will try and help you where I can, mate. That's just the way it is. Some people I spoke to, fund manager, one recently said that charity begins at home.
No, yeah.
I'm not in that camp. I'm all about what we can do in the community, like, and what you've done over the past 30 odd, nearly 40 years, mate, has been absolutely immense. So I'll always pay it forward. No worries about that.
Thank you. Yeah, as for the markets, I'm right in Pete's camp, and that's not me trying to ride side saddle with him.
You wouldn't fit.
The thing for me is, yeah, could the Ukraine war be over in 2 or 3 months? It could be, but then we're heading towards September, and you know what usually happens in September. And you've also got the primaries or whatever in November in America. Who knows what's going to happen with the markets around that? You know, because
more volatility. That's one thing guaranteed.
Yeah, there's a lot of hate over there. You know, far from Mr. Biden, bringing unity together, it's wider than it's ever been before. It's really bad over there. I fear a civil war. There's a civil war going on.
Let's not end the podcast on civil war, Elric. Yeah. Come on, man.
But
let's end this on a positive. We've been running for nearly an hour and a half. Let's bring some positive. Warm people up a little bit. Not freeze them off.
Okay, I'll warm them
Come
up.
on, man.
I'll warm them up more.
Leave us with one positive, Elric. Come on, otherwise.
One positive.
Yes, please.
I think we'll be out of the woods this time next year.
Right, it's the best you can do. Pete, over to you. Give us a positive. I'm done with Elric. Come on.
Right, well,
Give us one positive, Pete.
all
Short and
I will
sweet.
say
30
is
seconds.
this too shall pass. You know, history tells us, but whenever markets are
Bravo.
bad, whether times are bad, it's a fleeting moment in the whole panoply of time, and it will pass and things will get better. Things can only get
Bravo,
better.
wheelie dealer. See, Elric, that's how it's done, mate. That is how it's done.
I'm a novice at this.
See,
I'm a
more
novice.
lessons for Elric. Right, guys, ladies, gents, thank you ever so much for listening to another marathon. Thank you ever so much for Elric Langton. You can find him on Twitter at Lemming Investor. You can find him on Substack. You can find Pete on TikTok. I said it wrong last time. And you can find him on Twitter at Wheelie Dealer. And you can find me at Conquest3 on Twitter. Please check out the other videos and interviews that I've done for the Investing Matters podcast. Some fantastic individuals there. And thank you for those that have already started listening to those. The numbers are absolutely climbing at the moment, and the feedback's been brilliant. So thank you for your continued support with Investing Matters. But it is the Twin Peaks show, which has been graced today with Mr. Elric Langton. I've called him all manner of different things
He's
before.
got a
I also have
Lemington
called him in
investor.
the past, finishing with an A. But Elric Langton, and you can find him at Lemming Investor. Please follow his Twitter account. There's loads to learn, lots of small caps, but also blue chip stocks as well. That, folks, is a wrap. Thank you ever so much. Take care. God bless. Goodbye. Stay safe and do what you can in the community for others.
Stay healthy, everybody. Good luck. Thank you.
Thanks, Elric.
You're welcome, mate. Bye
Thank
bye
you
for
for
now.
having me.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with Sharepad from Sharescoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit sharescoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.